Welcome to the March Committee of the Whole meeting, if you don't mind. We're going to have a moment of silence and a pledge, so please rise and join me. Thank you. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and again, welcome to our Committee of the Whole meeting. And this time, we set aside time for citizens of the district or parents of students of the district to take 5 minutes and address the board. Couple reminders, we limit it to 5 minutes that we have a handy-dandy little timer for so that you guys have an idea. Also, keep in mind that you can address the board. We ask that you not address the rest of the room. That being said, I will read these names out. If you can come to the microphone, state your name and your address for the record, that would be helpful. Thank you. First one is Jeremy Weaver.
Jeremy Weaver, 720 Walnut Street, New Holland. I would like to pray for you this evening, but before I do, I just want to thank the board and administration for your dedication to the students in the district. There have been some issues that my children have had to work through in their classes this year, and the administration and teachers have done the hard work to find solutions, and I just want to thank all of you for that. Let's pray. Thank you, Jesus, for caring about our lives and our community and wanting the best for us as our Heavenly Father. I pray for the board as they make decisions to guide our district. Give them wisdom and a heart to seek your wisdom and guidance in their work in this room. I pray for Mr. Snopkowski as he guides the district and continues to learn and grow in his role as a superintendent. I thank you for all the administration and teachers in the district, and I pray for their physical health and their mental health as they work hard to teach our children. I pray as well for students. Give them minds to learn, respect for their teachers, and kindness for those around them. Thank you, Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Next up is Audrey Perez.
Hi, Audrey Perez. I'm from Carnarvon. And a couple of weeks ago, there was somebody who just discussed mental health issues. And we all know they're on the rise, so I've done a lot of research, and hopefully what I've put together here is helpful. So established medical procedures typically treat mental illness with medications and maybe psychoanalytical therapies. In my opinion, too many children have been prescribed these medications. Medications may have a short-term positive effect, but in the long time, they do not show positive results for these children that are growing into adults. So I'd like to encourage you all to look at nutrition as a way to improve the mental health of our students and thus our entire community. Improved nutrition will affect our community in positive ways. A well-nourished body will be able to withstand stress, such as these last 2 years, recover from illnesses much more effectively, and then also fewer sports injuries. In the past 15 years, we have learned, as we have learned about our gut, and a lot of research has been done, that 90% of our serotonin, a neurotransmitter that provides us with a feeling of well-being, is produced in our gut by the bacteria that live there. So the abundance of and the type of bacteria that live in our guts mostly depend upon the type of food being eaten. So here's my idea. Instead of hiring psychologists, a better investment would be to provide our students with nutrient-dense foods. We would have to teach our children to be concerned about feeding the gut bacteria, because that's truly what nourishes and cares for us. For example, apple skins and yogurt are foods that gut bacteria feed upon. And Yoplait is not yogurt. I realize that this would be a difficult change. Our industrialized world is very efficient and cost-effective. I can only imagine what it takes to feed hundreds of children at a time and in less than 30 minutes. and then do that several times over until all the children in school have had lunch. But what are we trading for this efficiency? We are setting up our community for lifelong health issues. We've all heard the saying, there is no free lunch. Okay, our community has to pay for poor food in some way at some time. I'm also aware that there is a high chance that a second grader will not put a piece of raw cauliflower into their mouths. So, but maybe if one day per week, just like phys ed, music, and art, there would be agriculture. So hire a farmer. It would be a year-round position. Students could harvest vegetables in the early spring and the fall, and they could also stop by the gardens with their families in the summertime to see the vegetables that are being produced then. Lessons that reflect upon what is growing in the garden at the time could be posted for parents and students to complete together. So we would involve, you would involve families. Okay. Oh, I'm still going. Okay, small changes could make big differences, such as French toast sticks and syrup that are served for breakfast now being changed to a nutrient-dense apple and maybe a slice of local cheese. We do not want to overestimate what can be accomplished in the first year, but we should not underestimate what could be accomplished in 10 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Dave Horst.
Dave Horst, I live at 1186 East Earl Road. Good evening. A couple weeks ago, I shared with you that I changed the ringtone on my phone because I really sense this year is going to be your celebration. One thing I failed to mention, and last week kind of played into it, or the last meeting kind of played into it, teams that win do the celebrating. This year, there's going to be a lot of things that you board members are going to face. This is a year of reclaiming, recovering, taking what's broken and making it right. When you win, then the celebration happens. So I want to encourage you, when a situation happens like the last meeting, not to get frustrated or anxious, but to deal with it. And then after you've dealt with it, then rejoice. Realize that it was brought to the surface, so it could be dealt with. I think this year you're going to have a whole lot of those. Don't be discouraged by that, because it's a chance to right the ship. Last meeting, the new curriculum was kind of introduced, just an outline. But I want to encourage you to look at the specifics. I noticed at the bottom of the thing that was on the, that just showing up on the screen, it said, empowering global learners and producers. Okay. Is there a nation in the world that you know of that you would want us to pattern after? Or would you want us to pattern after our Constitution of the United States? If they do this curriculum as a global curriculum, I'm really concerned, because there's no country that I would want to emulate other than the United States. I don't think there's more than a handful of nations that are not communist, socialist, or dictatorships. And if we are focusing on the others, I think we really sell our kids short. Ronald Reagan said that The United States is the world's last great hope. We are a city on a hill. Our Constitution was instituted, I believe, by God-fearing men and women. I'm sure the women had some say, too, even though they're not on the Declaration of Independence. I know that John Adams' wife influenced him a lot in the decisions that he made. I think God intervened in the writing of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. I don't know any other document in the world that treats people as equals, like our Constitution does, guarantees the right to freedom, the right to liberty. We can pursue what we want. It's not a guarantee that we get what we want, but we can pursue it without being hindered, as long as we're not hurting somebody else in the process. So I would really encourage you to look, like the guideline he gave last week, they could teach anything. Look at the curriculum, take it subject by subject, study it, and make sure that it's what you want it to be and what's going to most benefit the kids. One other thing, I would love to, I mean, I get up here and speak most of the meetings. I would love to sometime, if it works for the board, and maybe if it's only a handful of yous, to set up a time after a meeting or some other time where we could come and we could dialogue. We could share our view, you could share your view, we could kind of get to know each other a little better sooner than come up here and I can share what I share, but I think you listen. I think you listen and I think you take it in and take it to heart. But it would be nice to have dialogue sometime. Okay. Thank you very much.
Still getting used to that. Thank you, sir. Next up is David Brenneman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Good to see you all. I'm sure you're aware of what I'd like to talk about. I really appreciate all of your work. Superintendent Snopkowski and all of you guys are doing your due diligence, and I want to acknowledge that and appreciate that. You know, this is a convoluted and complicated and difficult issue, of course, and I've always found that it simplifies things a lot of times to talk about motive, why. The why question really always gets to the heart of an issue. And why any of this is simple. It's the kids. That's the why. And ultimately, everything that we do in our schools needs to be subjected to that. It needs to be second to that, serving that or working toward that, ultimately. And I think we can all agree on that. So for my son specifically in the MDS class, there's a few needs that they have. What's their need? That's what our question is. That's the why we do this, to meet their needs. It's not a typical class. You need someone who can read nonverbal cues. You need someone who can see the students as they are, as individuals, who can see beyond the disability to the person that's there, but also know all the nuanced and complicated parts of each individual and their disability. That brings two simple things for me. That really simplifies this. One, if I have to specify the temperature that my son needs a coat, the temperature he needs a hat, if I have to give details for that level of his care to his teacher, then that's an admittance by the school and the teacher, which I've received this instruction from both of them, that the teacher lacks the judgment necessary to function at that level of the class. That's simple. No one can dispute that. That's self-evident. And additionally, this position is so difficult, so complex, that it really truly requires a special person, an exemplary person, an exceptional person to be in that classroom. It's incredibly hard to find good teachers. I think Elanco does a great job. I really do. How much more difficult is it to find a good person to work with a child who can't communicate when he has had a bowel movement or when he's cold or hot? Or uncomfortable because he's been sitting in the same position for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. It's so hard. We've already acknowledged this. It's hard to hire good people. So that brings two points. Ultimately, for the needs of the kids, If the teacher doesn't have the judgment necessary for this class, if that's acknowledged by herself and by the school, then she shouldn't be in that class. Small things with children who are capable to take care of themselves can be let go and given grace for. But children who can't communicate their needs, who can't respond to their difficulties, it's not something we can tolerate. This teacher cannot continue to work with disabled kids. She can't. She's not a bad person, but she's not the exceptional person the position demands. And then the second issue that this brings for me. These two parents right here are people of that exceptional character. No one's perfect. You could fire me for my job on technicalities, and I do a great job. I'm a good carpenter. I'm very good at what I do, and I take pride in my work. But if you wanted to, if you were my boss and you own the company, you could find a technicality and fire me. You could. Every single person here could probably attest that if they're honest with themselves at some level or another, they could be fired from their job on a technicality. I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm not saying there isn't some on paper reason for their termination. But I am saying this. This school desperately needs people who can do the jobs we have for our kids. And our kids deserve the right people for those jobs. We have two people here who are the right people for the hardest of the positions to fill. And they don't have a job here. And they want a job here because they love our kids. That's the character we need. I don't know how to amend that. The first issue is very simple for me. Every day that a student goes into her care, they're getting subpar care, and with children who are potentially in danger from minor overlooking things, that's dangerous, it's reckless, and it's harmful. It's not okay. That's the first issue. That, I think, is easy to solve. This one, I don't know. I am confident you guys are looking into this and thinking about it and trying to figure it out, and I really appreciate that. But I just wanted to share with you how, if we think about what do the kids need, how that brings up these two things. First one I think is easy. The second one is hard. And I really appreciate all that you guys are doing to solve it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Miss Danielle. Take your time.
Hello, my name is Danielle Brenneman. I live on Magnolia Drive in Lancaster. My son Miles is in the fifth grade in the MDS program. We recently moved him back down to the younger class. We now have a peace of mind having him in there since we know Miss Kayla does a fantastic job loving and teaching her students. Her and Miss Jackie are the reason we have always spoken so highly of Elanco's MDS program. We've spoken to you at the last meeting and written emails about what's been happening in the older class and with the new teacher. I feel led to say that I'm not mad at the teacher. She's not a terrible person, just like Dave said. I do believe that she should no longer work with students with disabilities in any school, since her character over a 15-month span has shown less than what is needed for these students. There's been lying on daily reports sent home to parents. Us parents have to keep track of our children's diets, how long they wear their orthotics, when they have bowel movements, and all these things due to the medicines they take and how we will care for them at home. So these lies might seem insignificant to anyone with typical children, but can have a big impact on the lives of disabled kiddos. It can mess up a lot of things, especially if I'm gauging what medicines I'm going to give him when he gets home. Moving her to another school or another class to work with other kids with a disability would lead to similar problems just in a new place. I'm more upset, disappointed, and hurt and betrayed that the reports about this teacher and the lack of care were not taken care of before. The paraprofessionals were the only ones standing up for the students and got fired for it. Even if it said that they reported to the wrong people, those wrong people should have done something. The director of the special education, the assistant director of special education, the special education consultant, the principal, and the STS supervisor all had received reports of neglect and abuse. And if the parents were fired for reporting to the wrong people, then it should have been done months ago. Someone from the school contacted STS during the investigation, and I found out that the investigation was done by the same people whom the reports were made to, and nothing was done. Shouldn't all of these people be held responsible for not reporting it to Childline and for not helping these most vulnerable children? I don't think any people like their mistakes being made known, including me. Nobody likes that. And once we cover up our mistakes, it gets bigger and bigger, and we have to take bigger risks to keep them hidden. Isn't that really the plot of all movies and shows? Is that what happened here? They didn't want to be held responsible for not taking the Paris concerns seriously before, so they caused them to be fired and then brushed us aside. They said the investigation found not enough. They hoped we would be satisfied with that, but we value these children's lives enough to push through. It takes character to own up to your mistakes. It's uncomfortable, but it's necessary. Everyone should be held accountable for the roles that they've played and how, and to show that the school will take care of all the students, including the disabled ones. There needs to be a new system to protect the children in this program. I'm in favor of the cameras in the room, and I don't know if there's any way you could discuss SDS's policies with them in your contract, but we the parents should be able to communicate with every adult who interacts with our children, whether they're employed by the school or the SDS. Thank you to all the board members who have been working hard to get to the bottom of this, and thank you for advocating for our children and supporting us as parents.
Thank you. Any comments from the board? All right. Hearing none, we'll move ahead to the personnel report. We need a little housekeeping, as our new secretary has requested. If you're making a motion or seconding, if you can just state your name so that she can put it down for the record. She doesn't know all our voices quite yet. So that being said, do I have a motion to approve the personnel report?
Paul Irvin, so moved.
Do I have a second?
Tom Wenzel, second.
Thanks, Tom. Any conversation or introductions, Nadine? Nope.
Okay. I'd just like to make on two individuals on the personnel report. Just like to say a thank you to Gail Erskard for her service to a fine publication with the yearbook. I contacted her and she said she's done this for 12, 13, 14, 15, 20, 21, and 22. There's some out of school things she has to take care of. One thing I didn't realize that it's most of the, what she does, a lot of it is out of school, that it's not really done in school. So it's a lot of personal, another case where an advisor is doing something out of school, not on school time. And the other one, being with my Ag Roots and part of the Ag Committee, is the resignation of Ashley Pearson. And her and Katie Rank have really breathed life into the Ag Department. And finding someone to replace her is going to be extremely difficult. You know, I think I have these numbers right, that Penn State is the only school that really graduates teachers in our state for Ag. But a good many of them don't. They might have a teaching certificate. They do not go into teaching when they get out of Penn State. So at this state, it's going to be challenging to find a teacher to replace her the coming school year. And those are my comments.
Thank you. Any other comments about the personnel report? All right. All in favor of approving the personnel report, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Personnel report is approved. Moving on to property and services.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We have three action items for next week. The first one, if you could open up the second attachment. This is the 2022-23 general operating budget for the IU-13. The total budget of the general operating budget is made up of the core program services and the instructional materials or media services budget. The only one that we get assessed a fee on is the one that you see in front of you right now, and that is the instructional media services budget. And you'll notice that under Eastern Lancaster County School District, when you look at the actual for 21-22, and looking at the estimated for 22-23, we are seeing a decrease. So we will be voting on that next week. Any questions on that at all? Okay, the next action item that we have, is the, we did a RFP, a request for proposals for ground maintenance at all of our facilities. We had two respondents. One was Showcase and one was Clean Energy, both local vendors, both who we have worked with previously, and both who we are very satisfied with. The proposals were very close, so we chose to break up the district into the elementaries and the secondary campus. So you will see under the you'll see under clean energy, they are going to do our elementary schools, and you'll see the total cost for the year for each of those schools, and Showcase will do our Garden Spot campus. Any questions, Lens? And this is for a one-year agreement. And then once our new director of facilities gets to work with both companies, then we might do a longer-term contract next year, but we're going to do a one-year this year. Okay, thank you. And the next one also is in the area of lawn services. That is the mowing services. And you will notice that, again, Willie's Lawn Service has been the low company that submitted the proposal. They continue to be the lowest every time we do it, and pretty much lower than everybody else by a lot. So, again, those are the prices that you see for per week per the district. And it's a five-year agreement. We did receive proposals from three other companies, but they weren't anywhere near Willie's. So, okay. All right, those are my action items for next week. Now I'm going to move into the budget presentation. Everybody, board members, should have a copy of the presentation in front of them. This is the first preview of our budget. As you know, we typically do that after the governor's proposal, and we typically do it in our committee meeting in March. A lot of the numbers have been solidified, some are not, so we're kind of doing some projections here. And what we try to do is go through the process. There we go. What we try to do is go through the expenditures, look at our budget assumptions for expenditures, and then go through the revenues and look at our assumptions for those, as well as kind of summing up and bringing it all together and look at the totals of each and what our funding gap would be. In addition, you'll see as I go through, I did put some other information in there just to kind of give some history and some explanations on for newer board members. So when you look at the salaries and wages, we are looking at three new positions. However, two are new. One is just a shifting from contractual services. We're looking to hire an additional regular education teacher at the elementary level at New Holland, and that should give us four per grade level. Learning support teacher at the secondary, based on numbers, we have a need for an additional learning support teacher. And then a speech therapist, we were contracting that with an outside agency, and we're looking to bring that in-house as an employee for next year. The vacant positions that we have currently, we have no plans not to replace them at this time. So anyone that's retiring and or resigned, we will be advertising to replace those positions at this time. Salary increases, you'll see we're looking at a 3.15%. We're just budgeting that right now for all levels. That's on average. The professional staff, that's being budgeted at the estimated county average of all settled contracts. We're currently in negotiations, so there may be some adjustments there. But at this time, we did budget the county average. And then all of the positions and salaries have been level funded. Social Security, I'm sorry, benefits. The first one is Social Security. That's just a factor of the total salaries. It's 7.65%, and that's been that way for many, 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 many years. PESRs, this is the one that fluctuates year over year. You'll see that our current rate this year is just under 35%, and going into next year, looking at increasing it to 35.26%. Tuition reimbursement, this is an area of the budget that continually fluctuates. It's hard to budget based on the number of classes that teachers would take and we reimburse. However, looking at the trend, we're able to decrease that about $50,000. So we currently are at $450,000. We're looking to bring that down to $400,000. Health insurance, again, we continue to have good years in our health insurance since we've moved to the qualified high deductible health plan with the HSA at 50% funding by the district. We've seen no increase, and we're actually looking at a small decrease this year, about 3% decrease. So that's just under $130,000. Just wanted to kind of quickly go through and give you an idea of the PESRS rate and how that has kind of trended and how it's changed over time. When you take a look at the blue line, the blue line was a projection that was back in 2016-17, and you see that it was supposed to be a bell-shaped curve where the high point was 33.27%, and that was not expected to be at that level until this current year, and then staying right about there until 2035-36, and then coming back down. You'll see the red line is the actual numbers, and you'll see the dotted line, which is the projected. You'll see that our current actual is higher than what was projected before, and it looks like it's going to trend upward to 37.3% to 29.30. You'll notice that with the how volatile the market is and those rates are, they're only projecting out about 5 years versus the many, many years that they used to do. So, again, that's trending up, and we are hearing some kind of rumors that it probably will hit maybe 40% before it comes back down. So, again, we'll continue to monitor that. One of the things that's nice with this school district, as well as other school districts, we did set money aside to help offset some of those increases in a committed fund balance with PESRS, and you'll see more of that as we go through the presentation towards the end. When you look at the contractual services, again, where we see a large number amount of dollars going out is the cyber charter schools. And for those in the room that are unfamiliar with cyber charter schools, these are schools that are considered public schools. However, the choice to send their child there is the parent's choice. These schools are different than when you would see the private and parochial schools because parents pay for those tuition costs. With these schools, because they're deemed public schools, the school district pays for these costs. So back at, right after the pandemic, right after COVID, we were at about 1.7. That was up from about $1 million that we were seeing in pre-COVID times. Now we are seeing it coming down to about 1.5 million, and that services about 95 students. So it's about an average of about 16,300 per student. And as the board knows, and not sure if the community is aware, but the amount of dollars that get sent to the cyber charter school is based on the costs of the school district. So it's not based on the costs of the charter school, it's based on our costs. So each student coming from a different district has a different amount of money going with that student. All other tuition students, like our IU tuition student, we send students to the IU. We have students going to the Chester County IU. We have students going to New Story, as well as River Rock, some outside placements. We're keeping those all at our 21-22 budgeted levels. The LCCTC, the Career and Technology Center, as we approved the budget last month, you noticed that there was a $91,000 decrease based on student enrollment. At the CTC, they have a three-year rolling average, and our average is coming down, so that's why you see that decrease. Speech therapist, this is just a flip from contractual to employee that you saw on the first slide. Classroom assistant substitute teachers, as you know, we made some rate adjustments in January for 21-22. They'll also get another rate increase in July 1st for the next school year. And it also includes some additional positions, they were the same positions we had pre-COVID, but with COVID, there were some positions we weren't needed, but now we're looking at filling those positions post-COVID. And then all other contracted services are level funded or increased based on contractual obligations. Supplies and equipment, we have level funded that. There's no increase or no decrease in that area. And under our other debt service, as you know, we're debt-free. We were debt-free last month. So what we're seeing a decrease in our principal and interest of just over $2 million. You'll see the transfer to capital reserve fund of $1.4 million. And you'll see on the revenue side, we are also seeing a decrease from the state. The state also gives us a portion of money to help offset those projects and the debt. The net impact is $2.5 million to the school district. And what we've done with that $1.4 million, we've added that to the $1.1 million from last year, and we're putting $2.5 million into a transfer to capital reserve fund. And our hopes is that as we build that up, we'll be able to do additional projects at the different buildings and the board, and we'll bring that up again this spring to kind of give you an update where we are. But you saw our 5 to 10 year projection of what the needs are in the different buildings. So our hopes is that with the rates eventually going up, that we'll be able to pay cash for those projects and not have to borrow money. And again, just so we don't get into a funding cliff at the end of 2023-24, this budget does not include any of the ESSER funds at this time because those monies will go away. We may use some of them to help offset some of the funding gap, but again, we're not counting on those funds for reoccurring costs beyond that time, so that we don't, like some districts may get into a problem if they're adding new staff, that they then have a funding cliff when that money goes away or have a larger tax increase. When you look at the total by object, predominantly in our school district, year over year, most school districts, 67% of our total dollar expended is for salaries and benefits. 23% is contractual services. 6% is supplies and equipment, and 4% is the fund transfer. So if you think about the total expenditures, when you open up day one, you have very little control over the majority of it. The majority of the control you have is in the 10 to 15% range. That was it for the expenditure side. Any questions on that? Okay. On the revenue side, we've seen some nice increases in these areas. As you know, you'll see when we go to the summary page, we did have we were being pretty conservative on the revenue side post-COVID. Wasn't sure if some of those numbers were going to decrease or turn around. And we found that they were holding steady and in some cases increased. When you see our local revenues, our real estate taxes, based on our collection percentage and growth, we're going to see a $500,000 increase in that line item. The interim real estate taxes, weren't sure what the growth would be like, but that growth has remained steady. We're increasing that $70,000. For those in the audience, the interim real estate taxes would be properties that are renovated or expanded or construction's being done after July 1. They'll get an interim tax for that year, and then they'll become on the tax rolls the following July. The earned income tax remained steady. Continues to increase in our area. This is an area that we did take a big hit when we thought we were going to take a big hit, but we never did. We increased that $600,000. The real estate transfer tax, this is the 1% tax when you sell your home. Half of a percent comes to the school district, and the other half goes to the municipality. We're looking at, that's been strong, so we're looking at increasing that $75,000 for next year, and our delinquent real estate taxes, collections through the county, these would be the taxes that are turned over in January that were unpaid, and we have about 4 or 5 years sitting out there that the county continues to collect for us, so we're looking at a $50,000 increase there. Our CBSD partnership, $40,000 increase. And then also everything else, whether it be interest or anything else, miscellaneous revenue is about a $12,700 increase. This is good news. It's nice to have these types of increases for the budget for next year. One of the things that I wanted to kind of go through is our assessment values per year. And just to kind of give you an idea, the growth that we've seen, you'll see in this chart, you'll see 2014 to 2017-18. You can see our growth there and our total assessed value and the annual change. When you look at 17-18 to 18-19, that was the reassessment year. You'll see that our total assessment grew by just over 28.6%. And for those new board members and those in the audience, we're not able to, as a district, no district is able to have a windfall of money. The Senator Wanger proposal back in prior to 18-19, they wanted us to have a two-vote process. We had to neutralize our millage rates. We had to reduce our millage rates so we collected the same amount of tax revenue, show what that millage rate is, and then after that we take a vote on the tax increase. So we weren't able to have a windfall, but we did see a large increase, which brought our millage rate down into the 11s, and then now we're at 12.85 mils, of course. And then after that, you'll see the growth. You can start to see it starting to pick up again. And again, this growth right here in 22-23, that's based on the municipal tax duplicate in January. So we're hoping to see some additional growth in that area and hopefully maybe get closer to the 1.8. But you'll see back in these days, you know, we were in the under 0.7%. So again, it's nice to see some of that growth. When you look at our assessment values, by land use, trying to take that total assessment and share, you know, what's it made up of in what types of areas. Residential is predominantly the highest in our district, 66%. Followed by the commercial and retail at 13%, and then you'll see the other ones, farmland, industrial, and other. So, again, predominantly we are residentially a residential tax base. As I look at the state revenues, these are a lot of this is what comes from the governor's budget and then ultimately through the state legislature. Basic education funding, this is the main education funding that we receive. I'm budgeting at the 21-22 level plus the six-year average of new money. I have a chart that I'll show you what that means, but wanted to give you an idea how I was budgeting. Special education, we're budgeting at the 21-22 level. We typically receive a small amount of money each year on this. Transportation reimbursement, we are budgeting at the 21-22 level. We have seen some modifications to our routes, which has minimized some of the costs, but we're looking at keeping that transportation reimbursement level funded. Debt service, this is the share from the state, the $600,000 that I talked about under the expenditure side. So you'll see the reduction of the 2 million plus this got us to the 1.4. And again, we're debt free at the end of this year. Social Security and retirement reimbursement. We receive 50% reimbursement from the state on our cost on the expense side for our Social Security and PSERS. Some districts, depending on their aid ratio, some of the poorer districts receive more of a reimbursement, but based on our wealth compared to the state, we receive 50%. And then all other areas within the state was level funded. This is the chart that I was talking about under our basic education formula. In this chart, you'll see at the top, you'll see the base supplement that has remained the same over the years. And in 15-16, there was a legislative change to any new money that came, that was put into the formula. They were going to provide it through this weighted distribution formula. You'll see from 15-16 to 2021-22, we received $1 million in new funding. And when you come down here, you'll see the actual years and how much we received, and you'll see the percentages that we received in those years. And then down here is the actual student weighted amounts that were added into the formula. So that wanted to provide this chart so that you could see how that funding distribution and funding formula worked. In 21-22, that was the new year of the level up funding, and that funding was $100 million to help about 100 school districts. They would be the most needy school districts and try to help bring them up closer to what their funding level should be. The 3.85% and the 168,000, this is the six-year average that I did, that I budgeted. So I budgeted this amount of funding plus the 168 is what I budgeted for 2022-23. I did not include 2021 because that was kind of like an anomaly year, that zero. What the governor proposed, again, I have the 21-22 here for your reference. What the governor proposed, and I presented this last month, he proposed a $1.25 billion increase. He also proposed a $300 million level up funding. As you know, it's got mixed reviews from both sides. So we know we're not going to get this type of dollars. I estimate it based on the increase, based on what I took as the 21-22, that if we got the $200 million and the $100 million instead of the $1.25 billion and the $300 million, this amount would equate to just over $200,000. What I budgeted, hopefully should be on the safe side, is the average of just under $170,000. So as we go through the budget deliberation process, if that number comes in higher than what I have projected, that will only help our bottom line. Does that make sense to everybody? Mm-hmm. On the revenue side, again, we have recurring grants. There are our title grants, Title I, Title II, Title III, and Title IV. We get them every year. They may fluctuate up and down each year based on the allocations, but however, we are pretty consistent about the 1.3, so I budgeted that at the 21-22 level. Access, we do bill for certain services that we provide certain students. We get a pot of money that gets placed in a bank account for us, and we are budgeting that access based on the amount of the billings that we receive on an annual basis. And again, just to repeat, I am not including any of the ESSER money in the budget at this time. On the local revenue side, predominantly we are 73% locally funded. 24% comes to our from the state revenue side. Those were the basic education, the special ed, the transportation that you saw on the other slide, and then 3% from our federal government. I usually share this at when I have this slide, and Nadine and those that have been on the board have heard me say this. In what type of business can a 24% partner tell a 73% partner what to do? Public education. Oh, yeah. It's kind of bringing all of that together. I'm doing a comparison of our 21-22 and our 22-23. If you take a look at 21-22, you'll see we had a funding gap of just under $2.6 million. We used about almost $745,000 of that PESERS contingency to help help offset some of those spikes. We have about $3.5 million in that account as of the end of 2021. So we do have about 5 years of that we can use to help phase in the increases. Last year, we had a funding gap, COVID-related, of $1.2 million. And if you recall, a lot of that was due to having increase in some of our EOL stipends, some of our contractual costs. We had a $400,000 cyber school increase that we were incorporating in that number. And then our revenues, as we talked about our pre-COVID levels, earned income tax of $100,000 decrease, interest income $200,000 increase, and basic ed was $160,000 increase or decrease. So you'll see that makes up the 1.2, As you saw in the revenues, those revenues have come back to pre-COVID levels and then some. And then last year, we took about $584,000 out of our ESSER to help kind of balance the budget so that we would have a balanced budget. And we were phasing in some of this money so that we could then get through the 23-24 without having that funding cliff. Looking at 22-23, our funding gap decreased about $770,000 to $1.8 million. We're proposing to use $750,000 of the PISR's reserve, which brings us down to a funding gap of just over $1 million. And again, back to that, I am not including ESSER, trying to do operational, so we don't, so the revenue numbers don't get muddy. Couple things I wanted to go through before we get into to some of the recommendations. When we talk about the Act One Index, the Act One Index is it's formula driven, and it's made up of two pieces in the formula. First is a statewide average weekly wage, the SAW. So that is the change basically in the average weekly wage for unemployment compensation. That's based on a calendar year. And the second part is the employment cost index. And it's an annual amount that's determined by the Federal Department of Labor for total compensation at all levels in elementary and secondary schools across the United States. And that's based on the fiscal year. So when you look at the chart, you'll see in column A, you'll see the percent change in the SAW. In column B, you'll see the percent change in the ECI. And the base index is merely taking A plus B divided by 2. And that's how that index, the Act 1 index, is calculated. Now, some districts have what they call an adjusted index if their aid ratio is greater than 0.4. Elanco's, it's 0.2, so we're not above 0.4, so we do not get an adjusted index. Ours, allowable tax amount before we have to take any exceptions or go to voters, is 3.4%. To kind of give you an idea on how our tax increases have compared to the Act 1 index, the Act 1 index is the blue line. The tax increases are the red line. You'll see we had a 0 and then 2.2% here. This is the 3.4. As you know, we did approve a resolution not to exceed the index in December, January. So the available dollars that we have are anywhere from 0 to 3.4%. And then you'll see the projection of the Act 1 index going forward. And then down below, you'll see the actual numbers down here. You'll see that they're projecting from the Independent Fiscal Office 4.3, 4.3, and 3.6. So to bring everything together, you'll see, if you remember the summary slide, our total funding gap was $1.8 million. We're proposing to use $750,000 towards the funding gap for PISRs. And then our adjusted funding gap was just over $1 million. What I've showed you here, if we wanted to fully fund the funding gap, it would be a 3% tax increase, and you'll see how much that yields and how much it would be to the average homeowner. We are proposing to split it in half, do a tax increase of 1.5, and then take the $534,000 like we did for this current school year out of the ESSER funds in hopes that some of the items like the cyber charter school and some other items will come down in the next several years to help offset that fund balance usage. That would be a $38 increase to the average taxpayer, but that is our recommendation at this time. And then I just go into the next steps. We will, again, give a budget update at our next two committee meetings in April and May. We'll adopt a proposed final budget at our May board meeting. we'll do a, have a budget update our June committee, and then, of course, final adoption before June 30th, which will be on June 20th. And that's all I have. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions from?
Yeah, how many did we say were in cyber charter that made up the? I know this is going back a bunch of pages, but that had made up.
There's 95 students.
So it was an average of like 16,000, you said, or something?
About 16. Now, as you know, we have about 65 of those are regular ed students, and 30 are special needs students. The rate for a regular ed student is $13,656. And the rate for a special needs student is $27,000. So that's, but then when you take just take the total average, it's about $16,315.
Okay. Thanks.
That's about a half a mil of tax.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
No other further comments, I guess.
I'd just like to make a comment. Thinking where this district was in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, when we went from one of the really a financially strafed district. I think Dave Horst would probably remember that we were in really tough shape, and some of the decisions that the board made in the early 90s, even before I came on, that put us to where we are right now, that we have the luxury of being debt-free and everything like that, you know, so... Congratulations, Keith, and the business managers that came before you.
Yes.
Yes.
And the board. Sure. Thank you.
Go for it. the question I had was, it might be too early to know this. Is there a way to know how much, like, fall through there's going to be from this year's budget that is left unspent?
Yeah, that was going to be I was going to bring that to the April board meeting. That was going to be part of my process. That would be my update, as well as, you know, if there's any other updates with any of these items, whether it be expenses or revenues, I figured I'd bring the full projection to that meeting.
All right. Moving on to the program committee.
Yes, I have one item on the program committee action next week, and that is the revised ARP-ESSER health and safety plan. As you know from the presentation on the budget, we do have ARP-ESSER funds, and as a requirement of getting those funds, we have to have a health and safety plan in place, and it needs to be reviewed every 6 months or so. So what we have done is gone back into the ARP-ESSER health and safety plan. If you want to click on the first one, that's the markup one, and that shows you if you go down till you hit some red. There you go. If you could go a little further. You can see that what we've done is gone through and marked or crossed out some of the pieces that were very focused on the COVID-19 plan and the requirements when we first were in a high range of infection, the requirements that were put in place by CDC and PA Department of Health. We are now in a low range, and we have quite a few less restrictions on us. So what we are saying in our new plan is that masks are optional. You can certainly wear them, as we have said, if you want to wear them, but we are not requiring them at this point. We'll continue to follow what is happening at CDC and the Department of Health and through Penn Medicine. We still get weekly updates from them to let us know where they are, where we are in as a county. And we will use those if necessary to make changes. But for all intensive purposes, we're monitoring. We still need to report contacts to the number of contacts to the state. But once again, we are letting families know if they have been in contact, but we aren't requiring quarantining or anything like that. So you have a marked up copy and you have a clean copy if the red gets to be too much when you're looking at it. So the clean copy is what you'll be voting for next week. Any questions?
The only question I had is, let's say cases were to start going up, and I think we've had this conversation before, I just need a recall. Before restrictions are put in place, that is a conversation that we would have here, correct? It's not, you guys would not just make those changes without updating the health and safety plan and having the discussion here, correct?
Yes, we would have a discussion here.
Perfect. Any other questions? All right. Hearing none.
That ends my report.
Moving on to management.
Okay, good evening. First thing that you'll see is a recommendation for graduation for the current seniors, the class of 2022. In consultation with the high school team, the recommendation is to use Wednesday, June 8th, 2022. That's primarily being pushed because of the inclement weather days that have been experienced throughout the calendar. If there aren't any questions on that, that would be up for actual board vote at the next meeting on the 21st. Okay, we will bring that back to you then. And then the second item that you see up there that's informational, as part of my onboarding and really learning about the Elanco School District, what I'd like to do is ask our community to respond to a very brief four-question open-ended feedback form that I'd like to be able to send out on Wednesday. It would go to all of our staff, all of our students, their parents and caregivers, as well as members of our community. The purpose of the forum is really to seek feedback and best understand what we're doing well as a community, what are the areas that we need to work on, what are the challenges that our community sees us facing, and then use that information to develop our goals and action plans and combine that with the work that Dr. Larkin is doing with the comprehensive plan. As you might remember, the comprehensive plan has to be updated every 3 years. Dr. Larkin and a team are working on that now, and the comprehensive plan will come before the board most likely in June. Dr. Larkin will also be providing an update to the board at the April Committee of the Whole as to what the progress has been, what the work is looking like, and then give the board a preview potentially of what would be available in the final document once it's there in June. The process that we'll be utilizing is on Wednesday, everyone who we have an email address for in PowerSchool and whatnot will receive an email and it'll have a link to the survey. Additionally, we'll be posting the survey on our website and it may also go out through Remind. More likely than not, it will also be shared by each of the building principals with every one of the parents who would normally receive a Friday update. The survey will remain open for 2 weeks. And at the conclusion of that, the survey will be brought together. We'll look at major concepts, major themes, major trends, what the community is really telling us, and then we'll use that to embed that within the process of the comprehensive plan. Once again, the purpose behind this is that the community ideas, the community goals, and the community thinking is really embedded into the work that we're going to be doing, and then we're going to be able to use that then to communicate out what our future is for the Elanco School District so that the community can know that they had a part in that process. So are there any questions on what that would look like or the meaning behind it?
Personally, I just love the idea of getting feedback from our community. Obviously, I think there's value in that. The only question I had was, you had mentioned staff would also get it. Are you going to segment the results then, I'm guessing,
to some extent? One of the questions within the survey, it doesn't ask for any demographic information or the survey is going to be completely anonymous, but the first question that anyone will be asked to respond to is what category do you fit in, student, staff, parent, community, and then we'll be able to disaggregate the results based on those four categories and then use that to potentially pinpoint either consistencies or differences of opinion and ideas depending on the information that we get back.
And do you ever see any future need for segmenting it to a specific demo of people, meaning at some point in the future, you know, the families of those that have special needs kids, getting a certain survey to target that, or, you know, high school or something, I don't know.
I think depending on the information that we get back for the first crack at it, and then also the goals that we establish through the comprehensive plan, I would want to make sure that we gather whatever evidence and information we can gather from local means as well as from our community so that we know how we're doing in progress towards our goals. I think ultimately we want to be able to have our goals be visible on our district website and that our community can see very clearly how we're doing in progress towards that, whether it's our student achievement and academic data, whether it's our placements and co-ops and internships, whether whatever it happens to be. But I think we have to gather that information first, kind of that perceptual data, and then use that to help to drive our process forward.
Great. Any other questions or comments from the board?
Yeah. Is there a way to ensure that people are only taking the survey one time? I know in the past we've run into this as a huge problem where some of our data in surveys we've sent out in the community has become almost just completely unhelpful because certain people have taken the survey 50 times and other people once.
I think we ran into that with
we have run into that several times.
Surveys, I think we did early on, the same person gave us the same answer about 30 times.
So what's difficult about that is if it is going to remain anonymous, then it can't be tracked by an email address. Mm-hmm. So we'd have to decide what's more important, having it happen only once or have the information come to us anonymously so people might feel more comfortable. Because it's an open-ended survey, I'd like to believe that we're going to be able to spot major ideas, concepts, themes, and trends within that information. Without it necessarily being skewed by a handful or even a dozen or so people who might choose to take it more than once.
Sir.
Yeah, I had a question regarding the comprehensive plan and whether or not school board members have been involved with that in the past. And I know you may not be able to answer, but Nadine or Keith.
Yes, they have. And they will be again this time. They're part of the whole group that looks at the big pieces of the plan once we have some of the goals and each piece finished, they look at it and provide input.
Okay.
And I think it's also important to add to that, there's also a public review required through the comprehensive plan.
All right.
So once the document is completed, presented to the school board in June, the goal would be that it would be available for public review until the July meeting, and then the board would vote for adoption at that point. We have to collect comment about that as well, so there's an opportunity for a full review by the community at that point.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions or comments? Is that in your report?
That's all I have for tonight.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any announcements for the board?
Yeah, I'd like to make one. At this time of year when the PIAA basketball playoffs are in the limelight and for a person who always enjoys to watch these games, I contacted Mark Schaefer before the meeting, and he says, as of now, Garden Spot High School is hosting a girls' 4A game, quarterfinal game, on Wednesday at 7 between DeLone Catholic and Lansdale Catholic, and if you ever attended these, there's not much that separates these teams, so the intensity level is very high, and they're very competitive games, and you get to see the best of the best.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Wenzel. Mr. Conroy.
Yeah, I would like to ask you, Mr. President, based on our policy of 006, you can call a special meeting, specifically an executive session that we could maybe have after this to discuss some personal matters based on some of the comments tonight that I think would be good for us to kind of just communicate together. If you don't want to, that's okay as well, because also within that policy, we could have a majority vote and we could have that meeting as well, which I would move then to make that vote happen if you didn't want to have that meeting called for.
No, I agree. I think there's value in having a executive session tonight just to discuss personnel issues. So that'll be following the meeting tonight. Any other comments from the board? Hearing none, do I have a motion to adjourn?
Paul Irvin, so moved.
Thank you, sir, for remembering that. Do I have a second?
Brian Conroy, second.
All in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting adjourned. Thank you and have a good day.